world's worst at getting up here and saying something after somebody leads a particular song, and it's not always the same song, it's just something that I think about. I wonder how many times we sing songs like, "I Shall Not Be Moved," and really understand what we're singing. Those of you who know me, and if you don't, before we all leave this world, if we live long enough, you'll find out I like to talk about the songs that we sing. Because this has nothing to do with the lesson whatsoever. In Ephesians chapter 5 at verse 19, in Colossians chapter 3 at verse 16, we always talk about those give us authority for only singing. Okay. But that's not the only thing there. Those two verses tell us that in our singing, we should be teaching and admonishing one another. I wonder how often we think about the words of the song rather than the notes, the melody. I shall not be moved. That means that I must stand fast and I must stand firm regardless of what comes my way. Regardless of what storms in life, you all didn't know I could get into my lesson by doing all of that, did you? Regardless of what storms in life may come my way. Storms come and storms go, and when storms are over, people start picking up and trying to get back to normal once again. Trying to make the best of the situation at hand. Most folks really don't understand what normal is, because normal is simply a relative term. And normal can be this to me, and it can be something else to someone else. Most of us simply want some sort of a semblance of routine and familiarity in our lives. Here, in this area, we don't have too much trouble with storms. Oh, we have an earthquake every now and then, but we don't have too much trouble with storms. When you go back to the Midwest, and especially if you go back toward the South and the Deep South, they have thunderstorms almost on a daily basis through the summertime. Many of them are accompanied by lightning. It's fun to sit out on the front porch and watch the lightning dance across the sky. No, everybody thinks I'm nuts when I say that. It's fun to do that. But those storms are dangerous and they destroy property. Many people, realizing this, make some sort of preparations for them. Maybe the preparations that they make are to board up their windows or buy generators so that they might be certain that they have electricity to keep their appliances running. Maybe it is that they stock up on food and water. Others will put together some sort of what they might call a survival kit with enough to get them by for several days, several weeks, several months, even in some cases. Some people will go out and buy more insurance in case something happens. Some people work very hard at preparing for these storms, while other people put very little, if any, effort into that same preparation. Preparations can help us when it comes to natural disasters. They can keep us safe. But what preparations ought we to make for judgment? We often talk about things of this life, and we often talk about things of a spiritual nature, but I think oftentimes we ignore the idea of judgment far too much. Yet Jesus makes it very clear that unless we prepare, we can expect certain disaster in that final day. It is coming. It is coming. We may not know when for certain that it is coming, but it is coming. Therefore, we need to make preparation. Paul wrote in in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 at verse 10, and said, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or evil." Paul said all of us are going to have to stand before that judgment seat someday. Not one of us is going to be able to avoid it. It is there and we will face it. The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 9 at verse 27, "Inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment." Each one of us will leave this life. Each one of us will face the Lord when He opens the books. And when He recounts what we have done in this life. What excuse are we going to give Him that will be satisfactory to Him for why we missed the mark? In Matthew chapter 7, starting there at verse 21, we read these words: "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" There are many ideas throughout the world, throughout society as we know it even, on what it takes to prepare for judgment. Many people figure that living a good moral life will take care of that situation. That as long as we treat our fellow man like we ought to, as long as we don't do anything bad like murder somebody, commit rape, or something like this, we're fine. Other people have the idea that perhaps they can get there on one of their saintly relatives' coattails. Have you ever heard the expression? And I'm sure you have, because we all use it. And it is a misnomer, but we all use it. Have you ever heard the expression, "I grew up in the church"? Folks, I don't care if your great, 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 let's see, how many can I put in there, granddaddy was the finest preacher in the world. It's not going to help you get to heaven. Other people have the idea that being religious in some fashion, practicing some sort of religion, is enough to get the job done. There are a lot of other things that I could go through at the same time. People have the strangest ideas about what it takes to get through judgment. In our society today, people don't really want to know about judgment. We see all of these ideas and we think, what a picture it paints. Many who went through life believing they were doing great things, find they never served the Lord at all. In that passage in Matthew chapter 7, he says, "There many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles. I will declare to them, I never knew you." That doesn't mean that he didn't know who they were. What that means is that he doesn't recognize them for what they claim to be. He doesn't recognize them as his followers. We might change the word. He doesn't recognize them as Christians. Jesus is very plain in what he says. Those who must depart from him practice lawlessness. That word comes from the Greek, which literally means without command. When you turn over to 1 John chapter 3 at verse 4, John talks about sin in this particular case. And John defines sin for us very well. John says sin is lawlessness. Jesus says, "Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness." Now, my college education got interrupted someplace along the line, especially in English. Okay? But I do believe that if sin is defined as lawlessness, then in this passage in Matthew chapter 7, we can substitute the word sin for lawlessness. Jesus says, "Depart from me, you who practice sin." And they're saying, "We don't sin. We were doing things for you." He says, "You were sinning." It's that simple, folks. Obedience. Obedience in the here and now is essential in preparing for the hereafter. Obedience to Jesus is all about putting priorities in their proper place and knowing whom we serve. If you turn over to Romans for just a moment, chapter 6. Starting there at verse 12, working down through verse 16. Paul writes to the Roman brethren and says, "Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its lusts. And do not go on presenting the members of your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness. But present yourselves to God as those alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. For sin shall not be master over you, for you are not under law, but under grace. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under law, but under grace? May it never be. Do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves of the one whom you obey, either of sin resulting in death, or of obedience resulting in righteousness?" Paul says it is a matter of getting our priorities straight and understanding who our master is, what we are supposed to be doing, when we are supposed to be doing it. You notice in that passage, he says, don't present your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness. Don't use the capacity that you have to commit lawlessness. Use it rather to serve God. whether it be the mind or whether it be the hands, the feet, use your body to serve God. John Kenneth Galbraith, in his autobiography entitled A Life in Our Times, made an illustration of what devotion is. He used his housekeeper, a lady by the name of Emily Gloria Wilson. In his book, he says, "It had been a wearying day, and I asked Emily to hold all calls while I had a nap." Anybody relate to that? I expect all of us do it one time or another, don't we? I asked Emily to hold all calls while I had a nap. Shortly thereafter, the phone rang. Lyndon Johnson was calling from the White House. "Time to wake him up, folks. The president is on the line." He said, "Get me Ken Galbraith. This is Lyndon Johnson." Mrs. Wilson said, "He is sleeping, Mr. President. He said not to disturb him." "Well, wake him up. I want to talk to him." "This is the President of the United States on the other end of the telephone. This isn't the next door neighbor. It isn't the guy you go fishing with. It isn't your brother. It isn't your sister, your mother, your father. This is the President of the United States. Wake him up. This must be important." "No, Mr. President, I work for him, not you." When I called the president back, he could scarcely control his pleasure. "Tell that woman I want her here in the White House." Now that's devotion. That's getting your priorities straight. Who did she work for? The president? Or Mr. Galbraith? Who did she take orders from? The president or Mr. Galbraith? That's getting your priorities straight, folks. And that's what we have to understand. And that's what Paul is talking about right there in Romans chapter 6, verses 12 through 16. Who do we take orders from? Do we take orders from the world and from Satan? Or do we work for God? If we work for God, don't you think? Or as we used to say it back in Oklahoma, don't you think? You ought to pay attention to what He says. Think about that one for a minute. Once again, Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. We'll continue our reading down through verse 27. "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house. And yet, it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Everyone wants to build a shelter of some sort. Everyone wants to be protected from the storm. The shelter may be a home, a house, something to live in that will protect us from the elements should it decide to start raining or start snowing. Should a tornado come through? Yeah, once in a while we get them, not very often though. Should something happen? It might be a house. Some people think that the shelter is in their career. As long as they have work, as long as they have income, they will be fine. Many people in the world think that their shelter comes from something called financial security. Others call it by other names. But the fact is that everyone wants something that will give them refuge from the storms of life. I submit to you that there is nothing that we can build with our hands that will shelter you from the storms of life. However, there is a shelter. Christ is that rock that is being spoken of in Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 and 25. He is the rock that will not allow us to fall. He is the shelter. He will keep us safe. In Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, Jesus had asked His disciples, He says, "Who do men say that I am?" And they answered Him, "Some say that you are John the Baptist. Some say that you are Elijah. Some say that you're Jeremiah. Some say you're someone else." And He turned back around to them and He said, "And who do you say that I am?" And Peter's great statement, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus commends Peter for what he says and says, "You shall from now on be called Peter." No, I'm not going into the Greek in this, folks. Okay? That's a study for Tom to do another day. He says, "Upon this rock," what rock? "I am the Christ, the Son of the living God." Upon that truth, He said, "I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it." There's your shelter. Nothing that this world can do to knock down what Christ built. No matter how hard it tries, nothing this world can do to knock down what Christ built. There's your shelter, folks. If you turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 10 and 11. The Apostle Paul writes there and says, "According to the grace of God, which was given to me like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another is building on it. But each man must be careful how he builds on it. For no man can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." You want a shelter from the storm right now. For whatever life might throw at you, put your life in His hands. He is the one that can take care of you. He provides stability, and He provides a constancy in a rapidly changing world. Friday night, we will talk about an unchanging Christ in a changing world. If you look at Mark chapter 13 at verse 31, Jesus says, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." Folks, whatever shelter we find is temporary. If we base our shelter in this life, it is temporary. The only thing that will last is what Jesus said. And that's the only shelter that is permanent. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 20 through 22, down through 25, Peter says, "Since you have, in obedience to the truth, purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart. For you have been born again, not of seed which is perishable, but imperishable. That is, through the living and enduring Word of God. Why? For all flesh is like grass, and all its glory like the flower of grass. The grass withers, and the flower falls off. But the Word of the Lord endures forever." If you want a shelter that's going to last, get into God's Word and be obedient to it. That is the only one that will see you through all the trials of life. The only one that will do so. Building on truth gives you an advantage that others don't have. It gives you confidence in the day of trouble. Building on sand, on the other hand, provides no safety at all. None whatsoever. Remember what He said there in Matthew chapter 7, verses 26 and 27? The philosophies, the traditions, the morals of men, society and culture, all of these will leave us floundering when adversity comes. None of them will protect us when trouble comes knocking at the door. There is no warm comfort in cold dollars. Back when I was a kid, and there's a couple of people in this audience that can talk further back than that. They can talk back further back to when it was worth zero. But back when I was a kid, gold was $32 an ounce. Now it's what? $2,000 an ounce? Compare a dollar when it takes 32 of them to buy an ounce of gold and a dollar when it takes 2,000 of them to buy an ounce of gold. Nothing in this life ever stays the same. There is no warm comfort in cold dollars. There is no safety in humanistic teaching. They can say all they want to. Don't worry about it. When this life is over, it's over. Everything will be fine. There was a guy over in Luke chapter 16, remember? "Eat, drink, and be merry." You have much goods laid up for many years. Soul, take thy ease. Isn't that what he said? And what happened to him? There is no stability in the ever-changing morals of this world. Once again, there are some that can go back further than I can go in this audience. But I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma. Knew all the kids that went to all the various and sundry denominations in town, because we all went to school together. Oh, you want to know how small the town was? Graduating class around here is what? 700 or 800 kids? My whole high school was 400. Our graduating class was less than 125. How's that? Small town, all right? If you went to the Baptist church, you would have heard him preaching morals out of the Bible. If you went to the Methodist church, you would have heard him preaching morals out of the Bible. Pick one. Doesn't matter what name you put in there. They would have been preaching the morals of the Bible. Now what do they do today? Society sets the standard for their moral teaching. The morals of men is not security. In Colossians chapter 2, verses 18 and 19, the Apostle Paul writes these words. Let no one keep defrauding you from your prize by delighting in self-abasement and the worship of angels, taking his stand on visions he has seen, inflated without cause by his fleshly mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom the entire body, being supplied and held together by the joints and ligaments, grows with a growth which is from God. Storms are going to come our way, folks. They are going to come our way. No way around it. Storms play a vital role in nature. Without an occasional hurricane, the world's weather might be even worse than it is at this particular time. Gordon Dunn, who is the former director of the National Hurricane Center, said this. He said, fierce tropical storms play a vital role in maintaining the heat balance between the tropical and polar regions. Also, hurricanes help to maintain a stable fresh water supply. These storms stir up overheated waters, lifting stores of fresh water over land. If hurricane control were successful and none were allowed to go through their life cycle, nature would undoubtedly find some other method of maintaining the heat balance. And who can say that this new method might not be even more disastrous than the hurricane? Storms play a vital role in nature to help keep things in balance. Storms play a vital role in the life of Christians. They help us grow. James said in James chapter 1 at verse 24, I put the wrong one down there. James chapter 1, how about verses 2 through 4? That works a whole lot better. I don't know why I left my dash out, but I did. Anyway, James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. James says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If you have the Old King James and the New King James, it says knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. James says trials are good for us. They test our faith. Here's one for you. An untested faith is no faith. If your faith is not tested, how do you know it's there? James says the testing of your faith produces endurance, and endurance makes you perfect. They will come our way, and they are good for us. They help us to get through. There is no muscle growth in the human body without exercise, and there is no spiritual growth without some hardship. We learn by these hardships to depend upon God and not upon ourselves. Therefore, we can rejoice even while in adversity, knowing what this adversity is producing for us. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, and says, not only this, but we exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance, proven character, and proven character, hope. Paul says the same thing that James says. These trials that test our faith are good for us because they make us stronger. If you look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 at verse 17, Paul says, for momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. When you look at Peter's writings, Peter says that this earth and everything in it will be burned up. Jesus said, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. Anything in this life is temporary, folks. The only thing permanent is God. We can have everything in this life and still be totally insecure, totally unprepared for the storms, all the troubles we experience points us to one who keeps us in His hand while the storms swirl about. The psalmist wrote in Psalms 46, God is our refuge and strength, a very pleasant help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, and though the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains quake at its swelling pride. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy dwelling place of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She will not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations made an uproar. The kingdoms tottered. He raised his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Come, behold the works of the Lord, who has wrought the desolations in the earth. He makes wars to cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots with fire. Cease striving and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Things come and things go. Tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, all of these natural disasters will continue to visit populated areas and test the preparations of men. Difficulties that you might be experiencing in your life won't be the last test of your faith that you'll undergo. Faithfulness to God, faithfulness to God, is not only a result of the testing, it's also how we get through the storm. You want to weather the storms of life? Then prepare for them. Put your trust in something that will not fail. And that is God. You know, I could go through a whole long list. You having financial troubles now? It won't last forever. Let God take care of it. You having, you know, and I could go on with troubles all night long. Peter says, cast all your cares on Him, for He cares for you. How about your next door neighbor? Does he care? What can he do to help you? You want to be ready for the storms of life? Place your trust in God. If you have not already done so, tonight is the time to start. If you haven't obeyed the gospel, then you need to do so. Matthew chapter 7 talks about people who place their trust in man and who place their trust in God. It's not hard to become a child of God. That's not the hard part. You hear the Word, you believe the Word. You're willing to repent of your sins and turn to God. You're willing to confess His Son before men and be buried in baptism. That gets you in a position to where you have a relationship with God. But folks, far too many people think that's the end, and it's not. That's just the beginning. You must place your trust in Him and live a faithful life serving Him for the rest of the days you have on this earth, however long that might be. Well, it's easy to get started, but sometimes it's a little hard to stay the course. Don't give up the ship. If once upon a time you placed your trust in Him, but you have decided that the world is a better place to do it, and you realize that that's a mistake, ask Him for forgiveness. Pray to Him. He will forgive your sin. And you can be back in a relationship with Him once again. And I promise you this. And I can say this without fear of contradiction because I can prove my promise. I promise you this. If you place your trust in Him, He will never let you down. Never. Don't you think that's the place you want to be? If you're subject to the invitation of the Lord tonight,